Welcome into Baltimore Sports Today, the daily podcast on the Baltimore Sports Report Network. This is episode 86 for Monday, April 20th, 2015. I'm Zach Will from BaltimoreSportsReport.com. How was your weekend, Jabby Burns?
It was glorious, Zach. We had one of the nicest weekends we have. As I've pointed out in the last pod, I said there's 30 good days in Maryland a year, and one of those 30 was definitely Saturday. Sunday was pretty good, started that way as well. Got a little chilly later in the day on Sunday, but again, I'm not going to bitch about it at all. It was spectacular. Spectacular weekend. You know what else was spectacular, Zach?
What was spectacular?
The 1986 World Series. And here's the way I want to go on this, because, I mean, obviously, with what we got going on, this past weekend with the Orioles playing up in Fenway, brings back memories, I would imagine, not the Orioles being there, but of the 86 World Series. And again, I always make fun of you for being so young. I don't know why I make fun of you when I'm the old one. But tell me what your vibe is on the 86 World Series.
My vibe is it's one of the most famous World Series in World Series history. You know, the Ray Knight rounding third, the Red Sox error, and the 86 Mets, man. Being a friend with Patrick Guthrie, of course I know all about the 86 World Series.
Yep, and Ray Knight was your MVP, who you were pretty close with your Masson days, your old days with them. So what a series. Just an amazing kind of – I just totally remember the names on there for some reason from, you know, Mookie Wilson, and Dykstra was on that team. And I really liked the Mets at that point too. I mean, not really liked them more than I did the Pods, but I was just really enjoying that run they had and how great Dwight Gooden was, and just different things that went on in that series. It's just an amazing way. And anytime the Red Sox lose a series like that, I love that. I can watch that on a loop.
The Bill Buckner play, man. It hearing that highlight, seeing that ball go past him, it just, oh man, it still amazes me to this day that ever even happened. And
it's only second to win it. It's only second for me was when our boy, and I forget his name, the second baseman made that knocked the Sox out of the playoffs. The Orioles weren't really playing for anything. This is before we became
Robert Andino.
My boy Bandino, the Andino, put it up the middle, and you know, everybody went nuts. And Gary Thorne thought we won the World Series. All we did was basically keep the Red Sox from making it. 86. Also, there was an honorable mention for this, and this is and usually I don't bring up Ravens very much because again, I love the Ravens, but I don't love the Ravens. Todd Benjamin Heap, which probably is one of my favorite Ravens. Benjamin, if I had one, would be my boy Todd Heap, tight end, went to Arizona State University. Just a great dude, too. Just one of those guys that, I hate to use this terrible cliche, a pillar of the community, I would say, with him and his family, what they did here around Baltimore. Right. Well, what's your vibe on him? I mean, I know you were definitely in the mix there, and Todd Heap was definitely a part of your Ravens past.
Big fan of Todd Heap. Wish he would have stayed a little healthier, especially later in his career. But a guy that just, I mean, was dependent on for so long that it's not surprising. So many shots he took across the middle of the field from passes from bad quarterbacks that just hung up there and, and just got abused in the middle of the field. But you know, what was, especially his work in the community, Jab, is a big part of his legacy here in Baltimore. And I have very fond memories of Todd Heap. Playing for the Ravens, so
I don't have a monster like, you know, this is my moment with Todd Heap. The only one I do have is when the late Steve McNair hit him on a crossing pattern in front of Sean Merriman and my boys and beating the Chargers, I think, at M&T Bank Stadium, where my father-in-law actually was walking out, and he had at the time a Tomlinson jersey on, maybe, and he was walking down Pratt Street, got away from us as he was leaving, and the obscenities he heard. Now, he's a little foreign, though, so, I mean, he's fresh off the boat, but it's pretty hard for him to he understood exactly what everybody was yelling at him after that game. So that's the lasting impression I have of that. But let's talk about this weekend, Zach. What a weekend up at Fenway so far.
An insane weekend so far. And, Jab, you and I were hoping for a split, really, and the Orioles look like they're going to get at least that up in Fenway. They've got the 11 a.m. game today on Patriots Day. But I want to talk about what happened over this weekend because it's just been action-packed. And I guess we should start here on Friday night with a bizarre ejection from Ubaldo Jimenez. Just the guy had a no-hitter going, and you know, there was a takeout slide there from Pablo Sandoval. And you know, was it dirty? I don't know. It was a hard slide. I saw Pablo, I think it was against the Nats, Jab, with a slide into second base where there was an open hand going into a guy's below the belt, let's just say, with an open hand. It wasn't that bad, but a hard slide. Jimenez hits him in the back, and it's high. It's near the neck, but hits him in the back and quickly gets ejected from this one. And I'm thinking, you know, one of the most erratic pitchers as far as mechanics go. And you know, the home plate umpire has decided that the intent is to hit this guy, and not only hit him, but hit him near the head and toss Jimenez during a no-hitter. Buck Showalter, I thought, was hilarious coming out of this one. He later called it professionally embarrassing. But when he walked out, you know, he didn't even seem as furious as I expected him to seem. You could see, read his lips, Jab, just saying, "What are you doing?" And that's a perfect way to summarize it, in my opinion. I have no idea what went into making this call. I just thought it was just totally over the top.
What an interesting fright. We knew, we said, well, how exciting is it? And again, I think your Caps were playing that night too. We were trying to talk about, like, which way would you go? Which game are you watching? Well, Hibaldo's on the mound at Fenway. I mean, if you're not buying a ticket for that alone, on the roller coaster that is the Hibaldo experience, I was so surprised how that whole thing went down. And of course, the whole scope thing, I'm, you know, obviously just completely despondent over the weekend. My wife looked at me on Saturday and said, "It's a glorious day. We're going to opening day for the kids. What are you so upset about?" And I'm just like, ugh, you know what I mean? Because my guy is just down. And I know, we'll get into it. I've backed away from my earlier stance of just blaming the Red Sox for it, because I guess he did step on the bag, and I've got my emotions in check finally, and I didn't blame the Red Sox for everything. Though Big Sloppy made me realize how douchey they are with his antics on Sunday, and we maybe can get into that as well. But going back to that, I could not imagine a scenario where that umpire could come out and actually think, if he's watched Hibaldo pitch for the last, I don't know, however months he's been here, to think that he actually just tried to hit the panda. And but how hard was that? I mean, it wasn't like a hard fastball. I think it was up. I think that was the reason why maybe Zach took it.
That's what they said after the game.
That's what they were saying. And it was because it was panda going into second base. But I didn't see the Orioles making a big deal. And again, I even pointed this out over the weekend. I didn't think it was a dirty slide. I think what Brett Lowry did to Escobar at second base is not even close. I mean, I would be tackling him if I was a teammate.
Brett Lowry, that slide that Brett Lowry had was after he slid after the bag, much worse. I don't have a problem with what Pablo Sandoval did, and honestly, it didn't sound like Jimenez or the rest of the team did after the game. My issue is Jimenez is throwing a no-hitter. First of all, he also has three walks, which says a lot about who Hibaldo Jimenez is. A ball hits Pablo Sandoval, who's a guy that slid hard, making a good baseball play, according to Buck Showalter, according to Jimenez and some of the other Orioles teammates, making a good baseball play. And home plate umpire Jordan Baker has already decided the intent of this. And not only has he decided the intent, Jeb, but he's decided, screw warnings, this guy's out of the game. And that's just totally insane to me. In a game of baseball where so many changes have been made, we're trying everything we can to speed up the game, with the exception of games at Fenway Park, which just can't be played in under 5 hours, it seems like. But we're trying everything we can to do that. We're protecting catchers by changing the rules 20 times last year about how you can slide and protect, how you can guard home plate. That's being changed. But an umpire, can decide he's going to read the mind of a starting pitcher and decide whether he's throwing at a guy intentionally or not. It's totally insane to me. Crazy.
Do you think Buck gets fined for this?
That's the other aspect of it, right? That's the other aspect.
I don't think he even got thrown out, did he?
Didn't get thrown out. Jordan Baker, the umpire, doesn't have to answer any questions about it. The crew chief is the one that answers the questions on his behalf. Jerry Meals answers questions on his behalf to the media. So there's no accountability for the guy. And then Buck Showalter, who's obligated to do post-game interviews, has to answer questions about it. And in all likelihood, no matter what he says, puts himself in a spot where he's going to get fined for it. I mean, this is just something that has to be changed. It has to be changed. It's not fair to Buck Showalter. It's not fair to the Orioles in general. And, you know, so far, Jab, and this is subject to change, but you know, it puts him in a tough spot again. You know, 13 games in a row, and their starting pitcher goes 3 2/3 because the umpire decided that he was doing something intentionally, and it tasks the bullpen the rest of the way for 13 games. It's not just one game in baseball, as you know. This whole thing, it's a chain reaction, really. So I really wish baseball would look into changing this thing, or at least holding the umpires accountable for actions like this. It's totally nuts to me.
Don't you think Jordan Baker looks like a guy that would have and again, I'm not saying he's done anything wrong here, so just kind of work with me here, Zach. Work with him. Do you think he looks like somebody that might have a trigger happy type deal if he was in law enforcement? Not just because of the way he threw him out, just his look, his demeanor of things.
And that's my issue. That's my issue. I don't have a problem with issuing a warning for hitting Pablo Sandoval. I honestly don't think I've watched a year of Ubaldo Jimenez's starts plus what he's done this year, and I can sit here and honestly tell you, Jab, despite being an Oriole fan, I don't think he hit Pablo Sandoval intentionally.
I just don't.
Okay, three walks in 3 2/3 innings in this one. I don't think he did it intentionally. But my issue is the quick ejection. You want to issue warnings? Issue warnings. Do not freaking eject the guy. It's insane.
Right. It was insane. And he didn't handle it well. And I think the way that Buck handled it great. I don't know if you stayed up to watch the presser, because that's a must-see. First of all, Buck's a must-see, in my opinion, anytime, whether you win or lose. But for those kind of deals, and when he uses that phrase, professionally embarrassing, that is almost like when you tell your kid, I'm not mad at you, I'm just so disappointed in you. You know, and that's the way that he felt it. What he was really worried about, Zach, and hopefully, you know, as we're, you know, looking forward to Monday's game, it didn't really kill the bullpen as bad as it could have, and especially at Fenway, which is just a nightmare. But one of the reasons why it didn't kill him is because number 10 right now, Zach, is on just an amazing
ridiculous
pace, just an absurd
ridiculous
pace. And I am so happy to watch a player that I root for, and not just for the team, but to see a guy that I actually root for as a person as well, because I really think Adam Jones is one of the best people out there. And if he comes to fruition that he's some, you know, backhanded murderer, I mean, I don't know. I just think he's such a great dude on and off the field. And I root for guys like that, especially. And what a start for number 10.
Yeah, 4.57. He's 21 for 46, which is nuts. Had a ridiculous homestand, and I wrote in my weekly column on MassinSports.com about just how hot Adam Jones was at home. And that's continued in Fenway Park. I mean, hit a monster home run on Sunday in his first at-bat. And, I mean, the guy's just on fire. The thing that I wrote about, Jab, and the thing that's funny to me is Adam Jones is so hot because Adam Jones is swinging at everything. I mean, that's what he does. He swings at everything. And it's working right now. I mean, there's no question about it. He's one of the best hitters in the league right now, and is mashing not only for power, but just getting on base as well. The law of averages say that eventually, you know, Jones is not going to hit near 500. That's not going to happen. It's going to start bouncing out, and he's going to hit some balls directly to guys. And I'm very curious to see the reaction of Orioles fans when we start to see Adam Jones maybe swing and miss a little bit more than he has so far. Because a lot of these hits are on pitches, not surprisingly, that are outside of the strike zone. And this is Jones's game. I mean, this is the way it works. So You got to take the good with the bad, and I can't wait for those tweets to start rolling in when he eventually cools off.
So Zach, he not only hit a ball Sunday that I'm pretty sure is still traveling in the first inning off Porcello, but what he did later in that game to be able to kind of bust open a game that the Orioles were, I think, pretty tight in. It became to the point where it gets 3-3. A lot of things are working, you know, working. See, Manny's all excited too. And for him to just bang that ball off the wall, get the guys going, it just put the final nail in what you need from your captain, not what you need from the captain on the other side, I guess, is what David Ortiz is, and his display of unprofessional. Talk about unprofessional, Zach, and to go the opposite of what Adam Jones is. What a complete nightmare to take yourself out of a game like that at that point, just to make a point that you didn't check swing. Get a hold of yourself, Big Sloppy. You're not bigger than the game. They only had three umpires at that point, by the way, because one of the umpires had to go off.
Right.
And so Jerry Meals, who we, you know, spoke of earlier, who's a crew chief, basically said, you know, you went. I'm sorry. And I have to give the umpire, and it wasn't Jordan Baker, it was the other umpire, who actually backed up the third base umpire and said, yeah, you're showing up my third base umpire by dropping your bat like you're a 12-year-old kid. kid. You know what you're going to go, Poppy? You're going to take early, you know, get some early showers, get to dinner a little bit early. So that's the difference. There's one guy on one side, you know, going 4 for 5 with 5 RBIs, hitting over 400. And there's the other guy on the other side who's kind of trying to make it all about him. I couldn't be happier with so far how this series has gone, especially even losing that first game, Zach, on Friday. I still feel like we put together right now, if I'm looking at this team's head-to-head, what we had talked about prior to the season about why the reasons we think that the Orioles will be better than the Red Sox in the end, work came to fruition at least 3 of the 4 games so far.
Yeah, no question. Especially on Sunday, I feel like, you know, Sunday is a perfect example of how the Orioles match up against the Red Sox. You got Rick Porcello, who just signed a monster extension with the Red Sox, who, you know, I'm wondering why they thought he was worth, you know, $20 million a year, and he gives up 12 hits over 5 innings, and you know, it solidifies that thought in my mind. A lot of people worried about the bullpen, especially based on what they saw once Ubaldo Jimenez got taken out on Friday, Jab, and I just think that, look, the bullpen hasn't looked tremendous, but Friday is just a bad example. Different circumstances. Your starter's not going to go 3 2/3, and if he does, he's not going to be ejected, and you have to bring guys in all the time. That's just a bad example of what to see from the bullpen. But I thought Buck's use of the bullpen was pretty fantastic on Sunday, getting some guys in. Tommy Hunter, who scuffled a little bit, getting him in there to work and throw 2 clean innings with a strikeout. Found the strike zone. 12 of his 19 pitches were in the zone over 2 innings. And same for Kevin Gausman, who pitched 2 innings, gave up just 1 hit. Also had a strikeout too. Another guy that, you know, has been a little bit inconsistent out of the pen. So I think the bullpen's going to be just fine.
Can I give some shout outs too? Maybe we'll give some like stars of the weekend so far.
Yeah, the three stars with hockey on the mind.
I have to tell you this. I'm not the biggest Jimmy Paredes guy. I don't want to go out in this limb and just say, hey, this guy's been my guy. I got one guy in this team, and it's Jonathan Scope, and he's out for a while. But
we,
you know what happens?
About that yet. We got
to
talk
well,
about
I'm trying that. To keep it, trying to keep it together. I might need a whole segment to do all that. Just based on the way that we got that news, the way how quickly it came in, how it's just an odyssey of a day. But that, let's stick to what I'm going with here. Right. Let's go. Jimmy Paredes. The guy basically is just hanging out, getting ready to be shipped up to Norfolk, just kind of get ready to start, you know, getting the rehab going now. He's going to start playing games. Gets a call, like, probably, I'm guessing, because Scope probably came in after that game Friday, realized it was a little tight, said something to, you know, Richie Ballance, you know, that he's talking to Buck, you know, blah, blah, blah. That gets all the way through. And then, you know, he's got to get on a flight, jump in to get up there for a 4 o'clock start. You know, not that crazy for Saturday. But what does a guy do all of a sudden? He comes out, gets a double, gets a single. You know, basically that guy wakes up and can hit. And since he's been up with the Orioles, and I'm not talking about spring. I'm not even going to look at spring. That's great. He had a great spring. But what he did at the major league level last year is be able to hit. If this guy can continue to do that, it's just another bat, especially from the left side, that they need. Another guy I'm going to give some kudos for as well is Flash. Flaherty, we're not the biggest guys here. And listen, I pound people all the time, but I'm also going to give you shine if you do it. And what Flash did, hitting a bomb in a game on Sunday that they needed, had another double off that stupid monster in left field as well. He always plays a great second base. And if Jonathan Scope has to be down, and I guess he has to be down, that's just sad. I do think that Scope will be back, if not at the All-Star break, but shortly thereafter. From what I heard, it's not as bad as it could have been. That's some good news that we got. And basically, it's not one of these Manny things, and you're going to hear back a couple weeks from now he's going to get, you know, cut on. It's totally a different situation. So that's good news. But I'm just really happy. And another guy I'm going to give credit for. This is my third guy here, okay, Zach? Dan Duquette. And listen, you'll never hear. You better tape this, cart this up right now, because you'll very rarely hear me say this. But what he did to bring in some infield depth, and I'm not just talking about, obviously, with Paredes being brought back up and with Cabrera, but he's guys got like Janish down in the minors. He's got Ray Navarro down in the minors. So, you know, we talked about it before the season, this Hardy situation. Hardy gets hurt. You know, he gets nicked up once in a while. But when he comes back, they're not going to miss a beat. And even without my boy Scope, so hard to say. Even without my boy Scope in the lineup there, Zach, I think they're going to be okay in the infield.
All right, I love you giving Flash some love. I appreciate that. And Jimmy Paredes.
So does Cody.
But oh yeah, Cody does for sure. But I got to give one more. C-Jo, my guy Caleb Joseph. Have we forgotten that Matt Wieters isn't on this team? Caleb Joseph's hitting .375. He's on fire. The bat looks good. Defensively, he looks solid. I have been really, really impressed with what I've seen from Caleb Joseph. And by the way, this is a guy who's hitting number 9 in Buck Showalter's lineup right now at 375. Maybe not for long, but hitting there at the bottom of the order, I've been really, really happy with the offensive production we've seen from Caleb Joseph. He looks locked in.
What about Matt Wieters?
What about him? What about him?
I know. It just brings it. It's just funny because at some point, Matt's going to get a chance to get up here.
Sure.
And it's almost feels kind of weird to say this. I kind of like what we got going on with Caleb Joseph
Me
from last
too,
year,
yeah.
too. This is not Me just too. This small sample size bit first couple weeks of the season. Last time I checked, the Orioles won 99 games last year, right?
96.
He was a part.
96.
No, they won 99, I thought, if you count the
playoffs.
Oh,
if you count the playoffs. Sorry.
I need every win you can get. I'd take the spring ones if you give them.
Fair enough.
And he was there for, I'm guessing Matt went down end of May, probably. Is that kind of where he faked like he was going to come back in June?
Keep talking. I'll tell you for sure.
Yeah. So I'm just saying that this guy's been part of the team, let's just say almost a full season, and he's shown he can definitely handle a pitching staff, obviously based on the ERA last year. But not only that, he's turning into one of the guys in the lineup. What I love about what Caleb does, Zach, is he swings at like first pitches. The Orioles don't let a lot of pitches go by. Mm-mm. And that guy's swinging a lot of first pitch fastballs. He's driving them the other way. This team, I don't know what happened with this guy, Kuba, who I love, by the way, so far. He's got these guys going to right field. A lot of these right-handed hitters on the Orioles are using all parts of the field. And based on these shifts and how they're doing this now against right-handed as well, this team's going to be very hard to defense as we go forward here.
Yep. May 10th, by the way, was Matt Wieters' last game.
I just remember in June he was playing catch in Houston. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was like that long toss,
Random.
And then they're like, yeah, okay, we're going to shut him down. And you said that a while ago.
Yeah.
I mean, you were all over
that. Come on. All right, last thing, Jab. We've been avoiding it. We kind of talked about it a little bit, but we really need to talk about it now. Jonathan Scope on the DL, a partial PCL tear, sprained MCL. And so this is, you know, this is a tough one. He's going to be out for a few weeks, over a month, I think, is what we're looking at. You mentioned All-Star break. You know, it's hard to speculate. But compared to what we thought it may have been early on, not as bad of news as we may have expected.
Nope, not as bad. Actually chatted with somebody, not only just you last night. I had a couple conversations late in the evening last night. It was not last night, but a couple nights ago. It was a tough night because I really like the kid. He's having a great year, and all the shtick aside, I just root for guys, that young guys like that, especially guys that you bring through your system. And from what I heard from people, and I don't know Jonathan from anybody, I've never met him in my life, but it just is such a guy loves baseball. I mean, he just wakes up, can't wait to play. And those are the kind of guys, as a little league coach myself, I just love watching that, you know, seeing kids and seeing people really enjoy the game of baseball. Not there for the money, not there for, you know, obviously he's going to get paid, but at 23, to have your whole career ahead of you, I'm glad it's only the couple things that we saw. I don't think it's going to be as bad. I was really worried that it was going to be what the ACL, and that's what early word was. It could be an ACL tear, and luckily it wasn't. It was those other two that I have no idea, but I did. But my wife is a physician, so let me know that she thinks, you know, could be 4 to 6, depending on. He's going down to Sarasota. He's going to rehab down there. I don't know what that'll entail. All I know is that the Orioles at that age, when you're 23, like Manny was, see how quickly Manny came back from a couple of his injuries that were way worse, from what I heard, than what happened with Scope. No surgery needed. No, you know, he doesn't have to be cut on. I'm really happy with the prognosis and what can happen. And if you could bring him back, because that guy will come back in swinging, he's not going to, you know, lose any at bats. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He'll be ready to go. The one thing that does scare me, and I would like to talk to that guy, the injury expert, a little bit about the shifting and having to play second base, because you got to remember that guy turns the best double play, and there's a lot of plays at second base, not just the Sandoval thing, but that going forward could be something that could be kind of leery, especially somebody with so much power, and you get a lot of that power from your
legs. That's true. The good news is I feel like the Orioles are in good hands. First of all, J.J. Hardy's out. Once I get J.J. Hardy back in, I feel like that'll help solidify the infield. But Jimmy Paredes looks good, at least through two games. Everth Cabrera is starting to play a little bit better too. So we're starting to see him heat up a little bit. There's depth. There's a lot of depth here, and that's the difference between, you know, the Orioles now and the Orioles from 5 years ago. Is every single team in baseball is going to deal with injuries. I mean, it's just going to happen. Everybody's going to lose a guy that it's going to hurt, and there may be a guy that the Orioles lose that, you know, may hurt worse than Jonathan Scope. But it's all about those guys that end up replacing him, and I feel pretty confident in the guys that the Orioles have so far. So.
That's a good spot. And I'm still sad, though.
I know you are, but it'll be all right. He'll be back. He'll be back and better than ever, Jab. And he's young, so you'll see him for years to come. So don't worry.
Absolutely. And he's not going anywhere if I have anything to do with it.
All right, Jabby Burns, good talking to you, my friend.
You too, pal. Enjoy your Patriots Day.
Oh, you as well. You as well. 11 a.m. baseball. So wake up, watch baseball. Hard to complain about that. For Jabby Burns, I'm Zach Will. Thanks for listening to Baltimore Sports Today. We'll see you tomorrow.